Blog Talk Radio.
It's Wednesday afternoon, and we're excited to be on the air. Your hosts for today's show are Robert Brining and Jack McEnroe. They will be taking your calls and speaking out on the topic of the week. You're encouraged to call in and share some of your life experiences. The number to call is 347-215-9442. That's 347-215-9442. Welcome to POS IM Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and happy Wednesday. I am Robert Brining. This is POS IM Radio. I am joined by my co-host, Jack McEnroe. Jack, how are you
today?
What's up?
I'm good. How you doing?
Good. How you making out? All right?
I'm good. It's nice here in New York, sort of.
Pretty fast week since the last show, huh?
Yeah, no, but, you know, time flies when you're old, like me. We were just chatting earlier on the site, and everyone's a child compared to me, so it'll be nice to talk to someone in my age group, Miss
right.
Sherry Lewis, so not to be confused with what I thought was Sherry Lewis with Lamb Chop, who passed away a few years ago. But
yes, and I posted that on Facebook, and people were asking, my aunt asked me, she's like, Sherry Lewis, is she bringing Lamb Chop? And I was like, are you serious? So you're not the only one.
I'm like, maybe she's like has a second wind as an HIV/AIDS activist, and I just don't know about it. But no, unfortunately, may she rest in peace. She passed away. This is a different Sherry Lewis, a fabulous glamour Sherry Lewis, and I'm excited to talk to her because she was actually on. I think you mentioned to me the POS magazine cover the month right after me.
May,
so,
yes.
And I remember I was doing research on her, and I read the article again, and I was like, I remember reading this in my doctor's office, so I'm psyched.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. For some people out there who don't know who Sherry is, she's a longtime survivor. She's a former pop star, actually. She was a singer for the band Get Wet, which was an 80s band, which I had to look up online because, as you said earlier, I'm a kid.
You were 2 years old
in
the
80s. And I was 2 years old when she was singing.
Which I am a child of the 80s. I did the same thing. And you could go on YouTube and search Get Wet, Just So Lonely, which is the name of the song. A couple of her old videos come out. I think one is appearance on the Merv Griffin Show, which you probably don't remember either.
No.
he's passed away now, too, but it was really popular when I was young. And then another one was, I think it's on Solid Gold, which is a fabulous like 70s, 80s show. It was hilarious. But she was amazing. She's very talented. But you should go on YouTube and look at the videos because they're great. And I was totally, when I was looking at them, I was like, I remember this song. It's so funny. So yeah, it'll be great to talk to her. I'm a total 80s like fanatic. So I'm sure we'll have a lot in common to talk about, but
yeah.
I'm interested to talk to her about, I was reading some of her bios and various interviews she's done. And, I want to talk to her about like the breakup with her husband and all that issues surrounding that. I'm sure she has a lot to talk about. I just want to touch on that just because so many people, there's so many issues with relationships and HIV positive and versus negative and all of that. So.
Right. I just want to read the snippet that was on the cover of the POS magazine. You can look it up at POS.com, and she was on the May 2008 issue. And what it says here is former pop star and former heroin addict Sherry Lewis has been to the brink and back during her 20-year trip with HIV. Today, the new media maven jolts people into awareness with her podcast, Straight Girl in a Queer World, which I think is a really cool kind of name, and I kind of want to get some information of where she came up with that at. But she does have a podcast that she does, and there's about 60 of them, I think. I listened to one earlier today with Richard Berkowitz, who will be on the show in May, and it was very interesting.
Yeah, I listened to one earlier today as well, and she actually did a Heidi Klum, totally coincidentally, she did a Heidi Klum imitation, I think, so I'm going to want her to get her to do it again.
Oh, she did? I didn't hear that one. Which show did you
Yeah, it was fun. She said, either you're in or you're out, or something like that.
You know what, that's so funny. I was just watching a show that they just started on TV last week, and it's called, I Get That a Lot.
Okay.
And I don't want to go off topic too much, but it's a show about celebrities who act like they're normal people working in a place. And one of them was Heidi Klum. And she was dressed up like a normal person, you know, in a pizza shop working. And everyone kept telling him, you know, you really look like Heidi Klum. And she's like, yeah, I get that a lot. And it was the whole point was you were supposed to convince the people that they weren't a celebrity. And then they had to trick them on. And it was hilarious.
That is hilarious. My funniest thing, not to stray off topic too much either, but Rosie O'Donnell once said that someone came up to her in the Gap and was like, don't take this the wrong way, but you look a lot like Rosie O'Donnell. And she's like, actually, I am Rosie O'Donnell, and now I did take it the wrong way. I mean, it's one thing to tell someone you look like Heidi Klum, but to tell someone you look like Rosie O'Donnell, like, anyway, so I think it's funny. I love Rosie, so. Anyway.
Yeah, so do I. I'm just
What else is going on with her? She's, I think she's writing a book. I don't know if she's done with that. We'll ask her about that. She's based in West Hollywood. She's got a pseudonym, Sherry Beachfront, that she, I think she does her podcast as. So
actually I have Sherry on the line, so let's bring her on.
Let's bring the woman on.
Welcome to Pods I Am Radio.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
It's like eavesdropping. I go, oh yes, yeah, that's me. No, it's Hollywood. Yes.
So how are you? I'm sure it's nice and toasty there. It's probably like.
Well, actually, it's fine. I can't complain. I mean, it is sunny Southern California, but today it is cool, gray. It looks like it's going to rain. Cool is 60 degrees. I know.
Yeah,
freezing. Right. Yes, freezing. This is winter weather for 60 degrees. Yeah. Perfect. You wear flip-flops and a sweater and a knit hat. It makes no sense. It's like a homeless person. It's like a homeless person you dress. It's crazy.
Love it. So yeah. I just have to like give you a shout out and props for I just was watching all your YouTube videos and all your appearances on. I think the one was Solid Gold. Was it Solid Gold that's on there? And the Merv Griffin show says Merv Griffin, but they were amazing. And as soon as I listened to it, I was like, I remember that song.
Yeah, Just So Lonely. It was a lot of fun. That was great. I mean, you know, Zecca, my cute boyfriend and partner in Get Wet, he wrote those songs. And everything but Where the Boys Are, obviously, which was Neil Sedaka, sung by Connie Francis. So, yeah, he did a great job, my bio.
So for everyone who's listening and hasn't read a lot about your bios, like, can you just give us a quick recap? Because I know you mentioned this boyfriend who was your bisexual boyfriend and kind of how the whole HP thing came about.
Yeah, well, you know, 1979 New York City, very fabulous time. You know, before AIDS, before Coke was addictive. Cocaine, that is.
Right.
Coca-Cola. And, it was a great, wonderful time to be young and free in New York. And so he was my boyfriend. He liked boys and girls. I knew that. I asked him right up front. He was just adorable. Couldn't believe how hot he was. I assumed, you're so hot, you must be gay. And So I asked him, and he said, no, I like boys and girls. And I said, great, I'm in. So so that was it. So it was all open and honest, and I was a singer, you know, doing jingles and playing in cabarets and not really getting what I wanted out of it all. And he was playing in many rock bands. So he had just come back from a Sex Pistols boat ride, and played with Cherry Vanilla, who was a really hot punk, you know, rock singer in London. So when he came over here, he was looking for something to collaborate with, and so we did on every level. And it was really just a matter of months. He wrote the songs to suit me, Morton Street, which was our love story, you know, gay boy in the West Village falls in love with a girl in the bar. That's me. And Morton Street Pier, which was right down the street from us in the West Village. So we got signed. Lou Reed discovered us and got into Andy Warhol's Interview magazine and had two top 40 hits very quickly, produced by Phil Ramone. Brought us out to Hollywood, did our videos, first MTV videos. And then the record company folded, which was Neil Bogart and Boardwalk, you know, and they folded because Neil Bogart died of cancer. He was only 38 years old. And I had no manager. Zeca and I managed ourselves into a really lucrative record deal, but obviously we didn't know as much as we should have, because once the shit hit the fan, we were pretty much out of a job. So we, and with, you know, two records out there, you know. So that's what happened. And then fast forward several years later, after rehab from alcohol and drugs and unprotected sex with a bisexual boyfriend, found out I was positive, but I was clean and sober, so I stayed that way, and thank God I'm alive and well today.
Right.
How's that in a nutshell?
Now, you found out that you were HIV positive the day before your wedding, right?
No. I found out I was HIV positive 3 months before my wedding.
That's right. I'm sorry. 3 months before your wedding, and it was the day before your birthday?
It was on my birthday, which is April 12th, so my anniversary is coming up. I found out on April 12th, 1987.
Wow,
how old were you, Robert? You were a child.
In 87, I was literally 8 years old.
Uh-huh.
I was a senior in high school. So.
Oh, my children.
I'm a little bit closer.
But you know, yes, but you were still not getting HIV AIDS education in school, because in 87 when I was diagnosed, still going into a school, a positive speaker, which now is so passé, at least on the coasts. I don't know what the, you know, climate
is. It's just more definitely more common, yes.
Yeah. You couldn't, you know, the thing was, if you went into a high school, which some real hardcore activists did in the earliest 80s, you got handcuffed.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so in 87, the stigma was still so bad that, you know, I was just happy to stay in my home with my, thank God, husband, because he married me, and my stepson, who became really my first student, because I taught him, you know, about HIV and how you can transmit it and how important it is to use condoms and what kind of condoms. And I'm not going to give him a demonstration, but I wanted him to know, you know, yeah, but you couldn't.
Well, that was back in the day when there was so much misinformation. People wouldn't touch you. Like, I think I read that you quoted somewhere when you were getting married, you told your husband not to kiss you.
Right.
I mean,
right.
You know, people just didn't know. And I remember first hearing about AIDS, I was in college already. So it was like 89, which coincidentally is when I seroconverted. And I remember like just seeing something on the news and I was like, oh, great. Like another thing I have to worry about. Like, so, I mean, I think, you know, those first few years, like, they debated whether the information coming out of the press was correct, and people thought there was all these conspiracy theories, and people just didn't know what to do with it. So,
well,
and you, and in 87, there were, like, no drug options for you, hardly at all.
None.
So,
no drug options. Not hardly. None. In that time, they did have AZT, because they always had AZT. It was always on the shelf. It was a cancer treatment that I guess was not that effective. They really had it on the shelf collecting dust. And because of the AIDS activists, they were pushing for something because, you know, gay men were dropping like flies. I mean, it was just insane. So they pulled AZT off the shelf, but they only gave it to a select few. You had to be dying. Literally, like zero T-cells to get mega doses of a toxic drug.
And I think they were playing around with the – I mean, people still take AZT. They were playing around with the dosage. They didn't know if it was toxic for some people, and it was a hot mess. It's really good that you're bringing this perspective to us because – there's a whole generation of, like we said, these youngins, you know, the 20-somethings, who don't really remember. Like, I went to so many funerals and memorial services, and, you know, it was not uncommon to hear, like, oh, my God, I haven't seen John in a while. What's, like, he up to? And they're like, oh, you didn't hear? He died, like, 2 weeks ago. And we kind of got desensitized because everyone was dying. It was really awful.
Well, it was everyone was dying. It was a death sentence.
Right.
It was, there was, you know, even though the AIDS test was available in 1987 and it was new, when I went to take it, people didn't go, everybody looked at you, everybody like, why are you going to take a test? And the reason is because there was nothing you could do about it. Why would you want to know that you're going to die this horrific disease, from this horrific disease, if you're going to lose your job and you're going to lose your housing and you're going to lose your health
insurance,
you're going to probably lose, you know, friends, maybe family. I mean, so nobody went to get tested in those days. And the only reason I thought to get tested, there were two. One, I was healthy, so with no information, you figured, I feel perfectly fine. I take aerobics. I don't have any of the
aerobics. So 80s.
So 80s. My Jane Fonda matches.
I do Jane Fonda. I'm healthy.
I'm a vegan, goddammit.
Love it.
Yeah.
I did Jane Fonda all through college, so I totally relate. I'm my leg warmers, honey. I would readily admit it. I was busting out with the leg warmers.
That's right. We were just rocking to it. So I was shocked. I was really shocked when they told me. And then the doctor said, good luck. He shook my hand. When I met him at the hospital a few days later, he shook my hand and he wished me good luck. And there was nothing else he could tell me. Not how long do I have? We don't know. What can I do? We don't know.
Right.
Nothing.
And I mean, I was diagnosed, I think, in 89, 90.
Well, that's
and,
not so swift either.
Yeah, but, I mean, it wasn't much different. You know, I mean, there was a couple more drugs. Doctors still, I wasn't, you know, I was going to a non-HIV specialist. There weren't really HIV specialists at that time that were just coming up, but he did the same thing. He was like, your test is HIV, you know, your test is positive. And he's like, okay, well, I'll leave you to think about that. And I just thought, what am I supposed
still,
to think about?
Well, 89 is, 89 is still very early days. I mean, it may not be the early 80s, which was insane. But 89, you know, we still didn't have, listen, any time before protease inhibitors, not good news.
It was dodgy, yeah. But so, you know, to address, just so the people that are listening, especially newly diagnosed people, it's not all gloom and doom. Now, we've come a long way from
otherwise,
that.
We wouldn't be laughing.
Right, we wouldn't be laughing. So, yeah, I mean, and, you know, and I mentioned on the last show that we did, I get a lot of outreach from people that are newly diagnosed, and I always say, like, listen, you know, it is still very serious, and we're not treating this lightly, and we're all very lucky to be healthy. But, you know, there are a ton of treatment options available at this point, and you just need to get with your doctor, get your blood work done, get your viral load, you know, close to undetectable or undetectable, and, you know, make sure your T cells are in check and all that stuff. So there are, you know, there's hope, definitely. We need to reiterate that.
Oh, yeah. No, there are so many treatment options today. There's a lot of hope. It doesn't understate that always getting a diagnosis is traumatic because it's a life change. Hey, listen, turning 40 was traumatic. And
I know. I have 22 days left.
Yeah? Well, you know, enjoy each one of them. 40, and then I found the 40s are great. April
I'm looking
12th,
forward to it.
I'll be 55 on April 12th.
Rock on.
And, you know, that is a miracle. That's the good
and you
news.
You look here. Fabulous.
And I look
about
fabulous.
To say that.
Well, that's if I walk around with an airbrush.
Well, hello. I do.
I need to get me one of them.
I have to spray myself all the time. Oh, look, I look just like my Facebook picture. Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
So one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was some of the people here are newly diagnosed, and I'm just excited to have you on as my first female because I haven't had a female on to really talk about the issues that women go through.
Mm-hmm.
And you were talking about when you were diagnosed, the doctor shook your hand and was like, good luck. How do you go from something like that to where you are now, where you have this podcast and you're doing all these, you know, engagements and speaking to people? How do you change your life, like, from that? I know it's been a couple of years, but how do you transform from, oh, my God, I'm going to die to,
well,
look, we can live?
It's 24 years, so that's a long transformation. Also, during a historical time with AIDS, I was diagnosed before they thought women could get AIDS. So that was right there ridiculous. That's why I'm a straight girl in a queer world, because literally I thought I was the only female on the planet that had a gay disease. That is the language and the concept of those times. And, of course, now we know that, you know, women, especially women of color, 50% of the new infections are women. That's insane. But we took so many years before we could actually make it to the point that we were even talking about women. And we quickly found women through, of course, pediatric AIDS, babies born with HIV, and kind of leaped over the fence, of course, to take care of these most vulnerable in our society, these infants and, you know, and the children. And so it took a while to catch up, and women were not getting the message, or they were too ashamed, their issues, their backgrounds. They just were not showing up, their caretakers. It was a big deal. I mean, most times women did get sick. They waited till they had all kinds of female issues, female problems, ended up in a doctor's office and found that, you know, they had to be tested. And they were already many times in the stages of AIDS, not HIV, like I was diagnosed, because they had been carrying it for so long. So the old mantra was women get sick faster. But the truth was, women just didn't get tested, so by the time they showed up at a doctor's office, they were already symptomatic.
Right.
So that's why now, on both sides, boys and girls, get tested, know your status, because my finding out early in my infection, I was 750 T cells, and that's all we knew then.
That's good.
You know? So I was helped. No wonder I had no symptoms and I was doing aerobics. 750
right.
T-cells. Yay! More Jane Fonda.
That's the cure-all, is aerobics.
Yeah, it was. I would jump up and down the mirror, kick my legs, look in the mirror and say, not bad for a dead girl.
Right.
You know, and it really did. I self-inspired. But, you know, in answer to your question, I prayed a lot. I really have this, you know, connection with God. I believe in a higher source, and I think when most people fall to their knees or are traumatized by something, they usually go, oh, God, help me. And really, that was the beginning, and I was in a 12-step recovery program, so I was grateful for that. I could show up in meetings and share to a community that, you know, is like the gay community had. They really could rally around you, support you, tell you you're going to be okay, even though they had no actual HIV information, but neither did anyone else. But
right.
it kept me in the right lineup of asking for help, getting new information. And, you know, I ended up at Harvard in their first AIDS studies with an office counseling addicts who were getting diagnosed and getting tested and gave results. I was in some of those first programs working, and that kept me out of myself. You know, it kept me out of my own anxieties and fears of, and I was grateful because most people were in much worse shape than I was.
Right, and I think even now it's really relevant now just because, you know, there are still, granted the stigma and the, it's a bit lesser because people have more information, but it still exists, and there's still tons of people that are scared to get tested, won't get tested because of the stigma and the shame and what ifs. And I mean, and there, you know, there's a lot of, we're not doctors, obviously, but there's a lot of medical evidence that it's much, like in your situation, it's much more advantageous to find out early when your health and your immune system is intact and doing well, as opposed to when you're symptomatic and then you go to the doctor. So it's like, you know, then your immune system has to claw its way back.
Yes.
And, you know, so you get tested early, you know, it's much better to know. It's much better to get, you know, with a doctor and, you know, get treatment if you need to and all that. I mean, you're just living proof of that. that's the way to go.
Yeah, I mean, it was that. It was also being very proactive. One of the gifts, there's always a gift to everything that seems like the worst, like HIV, the worst time to be diagnosed, the worst news, especially before you're going to get married and want to have children and they don't know anything about women and children yet. But the gift was that I found out because I wanted children. And I found out, and that enabled me to start taking care of my health. And I was very proactive with no medications available. I became macrobiotic, changed my diet completely, went to workshops with Louise Hay and Bernie Siegel. Louise Hay, the great metaphysical healer. All AIDS patients and cancer patients were there, teaching us about visualization and meditation. We had to go organic because we didn't have anything yet from the medical establishment. And those were the benefits of knowing that in those days, because by the time meds came out that were so toxic, and I really didn't know how to even, you know, use them appropriately yet, you know, I could offset the side effects by brown rice or flushing with a certain juice combination or getting an acupuncture treatment and visualizing my, you know, my body healing inside. It was a really great, it was a great time of growth, I must say.
And I think all that stuff is still really useful for a lot
of
people.
Very useful. I use it. Still my lifestyle because it. That's what helps my, I mean, I have over 1,200 T cells and an undetectable viral load thanks to medication.
Wow.
And it's been 24 years and probably, you know, I was diagnosed in 87. Last time I was at risk was 85.
Right.
Excellent. So I think all of those things enable your wellness. It's a wellness life. You can turn a lemon into lemonade, folks.
Yeah, I always say, people that Facebook me or however they reach me, I always say, listen, I know if you're newly diagnosed that you're recoiling from this bad news. It's bad news initially, and there's blame involved, and you wonder how you got it, and you feel guilt and all these emotions. But then I always say, you know, you're going to feel that and process that however you work that out. But I think a lot of times you'll find that in a strange way, it's a blessing in disguise because a lot of good things can come out of it. Like you said, you take care of your health. You're more self-aware. You make good decisions. I was doing a lot of the things that you were doing. I was crazy. I was going out all the time and it made me, it was a wake-up call for me.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think that can be for a lot of people and there's positives, no pun intended.
And you also, yeah, but you also, well, maybe there is. Maybe the positive life, maybe that's, you know, it's all in your perception.
Yeah, totally.
Positive life. And, you know, the other thing that it cuts to the chase are in relationships, which, of course, we're all like, when do I disclose and how do you have them? And, you know, what if you're rejected? And I always heard rejection is God's protection, honey. If he don't want you, you don't want him.
Amen. 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 Testify, girl. Testify. Before you came on, I wanted to ask you about that, you know, just your experience with your marriage and then how, you know, because a lot of people are like, you know, I'm having problems with dating and, you know, it is a deal breaker for a lot of negative people to date someone who's HIV positive, and I totally get that, and I'm used to it now. It's been forever, so it's not a big deal to me. But for a lot of you know, young kids, and you know, when I say kids, I mean 20 somethings, it is an issue, and they're like, no one will ever date me again, and you know, I feel really shameful about it, and you know, I don't know what advice to give in that.
Well, you know, those feelings. All those feelings are correct. That's how we feel. Universally, I think we all feel unlovable. No one's ever going to want me. It's over. Those are the feelings of grief that we do have to, all illnesses experience those feelings of grief. And that's why I said get a good therapist so you can start moving out of that and know that, you know, feelings are not facts. And be careful if you start to buy into the feeling as your truth, then you will create that reality that supports that belief. If you feel you're not lovable and there's no one in the world for you, then your life is going to look like that.
Right.
But if you believe that I am lovable exactly the way I am, God loves me exactly the way I am, this is not a punishment. This is an opportunity for spiritual growth. I know that sounds corny, but it works for me.
It's true.
And my life can be bigger and better for it. And if you live your life like that, your life will look like that. Now, when I started dating after I separated and I left my husband, everybody assumes that he would have left me because I was the positive in the relationship. I left a marriage that wasn't working, very simple. And
right.
I wasn't going to let HIV keep me in a unhealthy relationship. Abuse.
Which I think a lot of people tend end up doing because they, like you said, think they're not worthy. So
right.
The,
I'm going to settle for less. Right. I'm going
right.
to settle for less. I'm damaged. No one else will want me. This is the end of the road. I had all of that. And then I was dusting myself off every day, getting stronger every day till that day came when I said, I think I can stand up on my feet and walk out now. Didn't mean I wasn't scared, but I had enough strength, enough courage built up to move forward. And then when I found someone I was really attracted to one night at a House of Blues, and he liked me, we started, I was not so fast like the old days, you know, pretty fast in the sack. But these days it was more like sexy, flirting, hot dancing, you know, all that good stuff.
Right.
And when it got to that point, you know, I said, well, we got to talk about this, which was really uncomfortable. And I
this
just
was like, well, you were, what year was this?
Huh?
What year? Like how long ago?
Oh, 91.
Okay, yeah, it was still really uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable.
It's always uncomfortable, but even then it was much worse.
Yes, and hetero land, very uncomfortable. Hetero
right.
land is still in complete denial. Really.
Which I think, really quick, I want to not to change the subject, but when one of your podcasts, you mentioned that globally, this is a heterosexual
right.
disease.
Right.
You know, so I think people need, I mean, there are probably international, I know there are because there's people from South Africa chatting right now. But, you know, and I think especially in foreign countries and Africa as a continent in general is, you know, it affects the heterosexual population much more. So we tend to talk about it as a gay male disease in the U.S., but it's definitely not. So. Go on.
Oh,
sorry to interrupt.
Yeah. No, so, I mean, when I just wanted to bring up the idea of condoms, because that was one step at a time to make sure that he was even condom-worthy. If he was one of those guys that was like, oh, I don't use condoms, I'll never use condoms.
I love that.
I hate condoms.
You are not condom-worthy.
Yeah. Off to the – you're banished.
Yeah.
So he
you
was like,
out.
Oh, yeah, he was totally into it. Like, oh, yes, I use condoms. I'll always use condoms. I said, okay, we could cross that one off the list. This is a telephone conversation with him, by the way. It's not even face-to-face. There were three nights I was sending him home with hard-ons, like, bye-bye. Like, what's wrong with this girl? She's all hot. She goes, bye-bye. So, like I'm an airline stewardess. So then this conversation happened, and I said, well, have you ever had an AIDS test? And he goes, oh, yeah. I said, how was your test results? He said, negative, which we all know. Yeah, right, whatever. And it just gave me an opportunity to say, you know, well, I wasn't quite that lucky. I'm positive. And there was a dead silence. And I thought, oh, God, that's it.
Right.
He's gone. And then he said, well, I still want to get to know you. I think you're great. And we spent 7 years together. And hot sex, 7 years. Not like.
He was condom worthy.
He was so condom worthy, honey. It was worth the conversation. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
and,
yeah,
and,
no, and I think there's it's really proof that there are people out there that don't just use those words and say, like, I mean, you're rarely going to tell that information to someone and get back, oh, my God, like, that's a deal breaker for me. There's a lot of people that will say, oh, that's not a big deal, and then you'll never hear from them again. But there are people out there who know that, have the information, have dated positive people, like, that are, you know, themselves negative, and they are, they know the risks, and they are, they understand protection and all that, and they're really comfortable with it, and it's fine. And so, you know, if you're having trouble dating and stuff, there are people, there are cool people out there that get it.
Well, and even, and those were days still where, you know, the news was not good, and, you know, the discrimination was out there. So if I could have scored a hot daddy in those days, you know, surely
it
that's...
It can still be done.
It can still be done. I mean, even when I tested positive before my wedding in 87, my ex-husband and his friends were telling him, don't marry her. Are you going to marry her? That's crazy. And he just said, I love her.
Right.
So, you know... Being positive and just living with being positive, it really cuts to the chase of, if a guy walks, like I said, he's not worth it.
Right.
Not everyone can handle it. And it doesn't mean to demonize everyone either. It's not about demonizing those that can't handle it. You know, you just have to accept people for their limitations. It's not an easy one. If I had to flip the coin, I'd have to look at it too. It's hard.
Oh, no. Yeah, last week we talked about that. I'm like, if I was negative, I don't know if I'd be running to date an HIV-positive person. I mean, I think with all the information I have now, I'm sure I would. It wouldn't be an issue. But, you know, if you're not in the HIV community, you just kind of wobble on with your life, and you're like, well, you know, why invest energy into this relationship when there's an HIV-negative person around the corner that I could pursue?
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know, it does still exist, but...
But, you know, today... Yeah, go ahead.
Just real quick, I just want to tell the people who are listening that if you want to call in and comment to us and Sherry, you can give us a call at 347-215-9442, or you can log on to Skype and use the click-to-talk button. I just wanted to get that out there real quick.
Great.
So Sherry, what's going on with you? Like, what current stuff are you working on besides your podcast? Anything fun and interesting?
Fun, interesting. I got a few ideas in the fire there. Mostly I am home writing, trying to get my book proposal finished so I can get a deal and write the memoir. And and it's quite a feat because, you know, it is a long life, thank God. And I'm pretty clear on how this life of mine has unfolded, how it happened. There are many times that I, as a public speaker for over 20 years now, there are more years than I sang professionally. And there are moments that I really get that, I get it. God gave me the ability to be a performer and a singer because I really have a bigger message to carry than a pop song, as much as I love them.
Right.
You know, and so there's, you know, I'm writing away.
Excellent.
And I am still singing. I did more singing this past year in 2008 than I had in a long time. Really wonderful. I sang for Divas Simply Singing with Cheryl Lee Ralph. That's the 18th annual fundraiser for the Women Alive Coalition. So it was packed with women who are positive. It's a big supportive community. Just a huge 2,000 people sold out event. I mean, Cheryl Lee Ralph had Patti LaBelle. I sang on a stage with Patti LaBelle.
That's I know, cool. And actually, I was listening to one of your podcasts, and I and you got rave reviews, apparently. So
it was really. I worked for 3 months on one performance. One, you know, like 6 minutes.
Well, if you're gonna sing with Patti LaBelle, like next to Patti LaBelle, you gotta come correct. You
it was
know
the
what
only
saying?
Way. That's what I had. Yeah, exactly. I had nightmares going, oh no, what am I doing to myself? But then I went to New York for Paws magazine. God bless Paws. You know, it's a year ago today that I graced their cover. Not today, in April. I was the April issue of Paws. And so it's nice that we're doing this interview at that time. It's marked that anniversary.
Right, that's right around my anniversary, too.
Yeah?
What's yeah, well, I was right before you, I think. So I was maybe, I think I was April, you were May or something like that. Anyways, but I was the cover before you. So
oh, nice.
We're eternally linked.
We are.
Pause history.
They need a cover party.
I have a caller on the line here.
Okay.
Guys, hold on one second.
Okay.
caller with area code 914. Welcome to Pause Volume Radio.
Hi, Robert and Jack and Sherry. This is Scott Kramer from New York.
Hi,
hey,
Scott.
Hey. Scott was actually just on the show on Sunday.
Yes, I recognize his name.
Yeah, I'm up at my mom's, and I just wanted to call in and say hi to all of you, and especially Sherry. I just wanted to say I really appreciate your show, and I listen to it all the time on my iPod, and I think it's great, and it's so cool that you are on the Pause I Am radio show today, because it's like my two worlds are colliding. My two online worlds are colliding in a way.
the cells in the universe are sparking.
Yeah, and it's in a really great way, and so I'm just excited to call in and talk to you and say hello and just keep up the amazing work.
I will. Thank you. You too.
All
you
right.
Too.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Right, take care.
We'll have to come and do your podcast.
Yeah,
we'll
that would be fun.
We'll cross pollinate.
We'll cross pollinate. We'll be bye. Triple bye. Sounds good.
That's funny. One of the reasons that we do the radio show is to show people that are newly diagnosed that sharing stories is really important, because a lot of people think that they can't find a similarity, you know, and they're the only one. And I sat here and I reread your article today before the show, because I read it, you know, when it came out. But I reread it again today, and I found so much, Sherry, that me and you have in common.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just in our own personal stories, and
yeah,
we're from two different worlds.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing. Like, you know, I went to Narcotics Anonymous and the 90 meetings and 90 days and the sponsor.
Uh-huh.
And I know what that – and that support system did so much for me there.
Yeah.
As it did for you.
It
and
saved your life.
Yeah, it did. It really did. It really did. And like you said in your article, is that you haven't even thought about it.
No. I was too busy thinking about living.
Right.
That was a surprise. I was surprised. I went to a therapist for 12 years who was specifically working on people who had terminal illness and needed to learn about death and dying, you know, process the leaving of this planet. And at the end of 12 years and in vital health, in my last therapy session with her before I moved to California, she said, you know, I thought I was going to help you die, but all you wanted to talk about was living. And off you go. So, you know,
I love
just,
that.
It's like John Lennon, life is what happens when you're busy making other plans. You know,
totally.
I mean, that's what happened. I was just busy being of service, helping others so I could stay out of my own self-centered fear. Even if they were justified fears, they weren't going to be very helpful. So, you know, the best way I could be helpful was to help others, and then I was grateful.
Which I think, I mean, that's so valid, and I think that's great. That's great suggestion and information for people today. It's like you, by helping others, you know, especially in the HIV community or whatever,
yes,
your choice of volunteering will be, like, it actually, you're the one who benefits.
Yep.
You know, whether it takes your mind off of something, it just makes you have a good feeling. It's like all those things. So, and
yeah.
You know, in response to finding a therapist, we talked about this briefly last week. I mean, there are people that may be listening to this who don't have access to a therapist or actually don't even have access to. There are a lot of free support groups. But just know there are a ton of really great resources online, like thebody.com,
yeah,
and PauseMeds. And they have chat rooms that you can ask questions. And there's some great Yahoo groups that you can get on, and you know, that just are constantly feeding you information. So if you're out somewhere where you don't have access to all of this stuff,
yeah,
that there's a ton, you know, just spend some time on the internet, and there's a lot of great resources.
Yeah, no, there are, and you know, it's like you were saying about, you know, people, when you feel alone when something happens, and you hear other people's personal stories, their experience, strength, and hope. And that's no different. That blueprint that 12-step fellowships have discovered that works phenomenally, the most successful program, most successful nonprofit of the 20th century was Alcoholics Anonymous, because it gave birth to so many lives were saved, and so many different fellowships were born from that one fellowship. So it's the same principle. When you hear another positive story and success, then you'll know you're not alone, first things first, and you can blossom.
Right, and you can reconstruct your future in your head.
Yep.
So I think that's amazing. I just want to ask you a question. What I mean, you know, you don't look sick is an issue, is a comment that I've had said to me before, and I'm sure as you know, you're very open about your HIV status, but obviously not everyone you meet knows who you are and knows. And how do you respond to that? Like, what is your response when you tell people that you're HIV positive? I mean, I just think it's interesting coming, especially from a woman's point of view.
Well, I now know plenty of people that I didn't know that were HIV positive because they look perfectly fine, because they are. You can be healthy, you can look healthy and be fine and just have HIV infection. I mean, that's the bottom line. There's a lot of us that look well living with HIV because we live with treatments today that work for many, and we also live a healthier lifestyle as a result of, like we're talking about, getting clean and sober. A lot of people are just getting healthier. So,
doing their aerobics.
Yeah. What does it say? I'm now in the host queue. Why did she even tell me that? But doing aerobics, exactly. But there was also, from some of the side effects that I have even suffered from the early days of protease inhibitors, the lipodystrophy and the lipoatrophy, there are lots of remedies, you know, the Sculptra. There's all these fillers that help. Now, there was a time my face did collapse, and I did not notice it. I would look in the mirror. I had a picture taken of me, and I didn't recognize, like, wow, is that me? Why are my cheekbones so hollow? And
right.
As a female who's always had, like, a pretty good body.
aerobics.
I all of a sudden had a pregnancy belly, you know, the protease pouch, they call it. And
right.
So there was all kinds of physical side effects that were beginning to show. Even though I was healthy, I was on HIV medication. Something looked wrong. But those fillers have stayed and filled out my face. I haven't had anything in 3 years. And the other stuff will have to be diet and exercise.
Right.
And, you know, at 55, I'm right where I'm supposed to be.
I have a caller on hold, so I'm going to bring them on the line with us. Area code 760, welcome to Pause IM Radio.
Hi there.
Hi there.
Who's this?
Hey.
My name is Dan from Palm Springs.
Hey, Dan, welcome.
Hey, Dan.
Hi. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, Dan.
Yeah, how are you?
I'm good.
I'm actually calling to ask a get what question.
Uh-oh.
I'm calling John, and I wonder if the album is available anywhere, because I used to have it on vinyl. Is it on iTunes or anything these days? And are you going to do a comeback tour?
I'll be a backup dancer.
Right?
You know, it is available on iTunes. It's a little bit hot the way it got on iTunes. Actually, Dan, who I'm going to out, discovered it on iTunes and sent it to me, and I went, what? I'm on iTunes? And then it said January 2009. Now,
yeah.
Boardwalk Entertainment. Boardwalk Entertainment hasn't existed since the 80s, and it was obviously just put on. And so someone somehow got it onto iTunes and sells it for $7.99, and I bought it too.
That's so funny. You had to buy your own single.
Yeah, it's funny for about 2 seconds.
Right.
Then I was like, how do I get, you know, justice here? So believe me, I'm in the process, Dan. Thank you very much. It's
thanks
hard,
much,
though. It's hard to break the iTunes code.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just researching you, I think it's also available on Amazon.com somehow, somewhere. So
same way. I think it's the same person with the same thing.
Right.
Is if you listen to the
you need to get a piece of that.
Yeah, and so does Zeka. I mean, Zeka and I both are positive.
So is Eckert still doing well? That was another question
Eckert's
I had.
Still well, too, and he's out, so I'm not outing him. He's been out since we broke up. He's been out. And, yeah, he's I told him recently that, you know, Get Well was on iTunes because I wanted to see maybe he put it up, but he didn't. So he's the writer. I mean, so that's his publishing. He should be,
right.
You know, it's very frustrating because when you're living, you're getting older, you're living with chronic, now it's chronic illness, you could use that money.
Right.
So
every penny helps.
Yeah, so somehow someone has really pirated Get Wet. And
yeah, that's too bad.
By the way, that fabulous Dan, he's a Danorama. He's like the video man.
Cool.
Yeah, he does. Have you seen Cher? Anybody
live?
Want to see the Cher live show?
Oh, in Vegas? No. Yeah. I want to.
Oh, well, when you do, you'll see screens. That's all Danorama.
Oh, wow.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, actually, I have a little soundbite of you on YouTube, so I wanted to play a little bit of your song, Just So Lonely, so people can get a feel of your voice.
Okay, everybody, get your Reebok shoes on.
Yeah, and get your bust out your leg warmers, and I want a lot of side pony action.
Let's get physical. Oh, right, that's fine.
So I'm going to play this for about 30 seconds just so people can get a feel of it, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
I love it, and I read the comments on YouTube, and I love how people are like, I love her squeak.
Yeah, our version of it didn't really do it justice at all because we don't have good audio, but it's
yeah.
A really cute song. I totally remember. I'm sure I did jazzercise to it at some point. So
it really embraced the 80s.
It did. It was quintessentially 80s. It was fabulous. Loved it.
It's fun. It was. I have to say that was definitely the most fun in my life. That was a great era. It was really a trip.
So you went on, sorry to interrupt, you went on American Bandstand?
Yes.
That's true, right? Because I dated someone that was a featured regular dancer on that show. So I used to watch that show all the time, which again was before Robert's time. It's hilarious. But half the time, back in the day, you guys lip synced. You didn't sing live, did you?
Oh, dead mics, all dead mics.
All dead mics, yeah.
Yeah, and it's that's why when Dick Clark comes over to do the interview, he's the only one that's got a live mic.
Right.
This is like total prop.
Right.
But I sang to it. I mean, you can see my lip sync is perfecto.
Right.
It's totally the opposite Ashley Simpson. I was like, I was looking at her going, come on, girl, can't you even sing your own track? But when she couldn't figure out which song it was. But I just sang live. So that's the only way you can make it to me. It made it feel real for me. I hated
it.
Of
course.
That was my first experience as an adult with television. And that was supposedly live television because you have an audience, and it would feel so false to air sing. I mean, that what is that? It just felt
right. Weird.
So air singing. I mean, it's not air guitar, air singing.
That's funny. Sherry, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was recently in the last, last week, they released the Pedro movie.
Oh, yes.
I wanted to kind of touch about that, and I wanted to talk to Jack about it, too, because I kind of wanted to do a little bit of a review on it. We did one on Sunday, but I wanted to hear what you guys thought about it.
Sherry, you go first.
Let me say first, I was very happy that they did Pedro's story because he's an early hero. He's a hero, but he was one of the very first heroes. He was right there with the Brian White era. You know, I mean, he's a hero. And that's why his name is really, you know, with all youth HIV agencies, you know, his name is up many places. And I think the actor did a terrific job. And Dustin Lance, you know, he wrote the screenplay, so I was very excited. But it was a TV movie. I thought I was hoping it would be better.
Right.
I mean, it really was like, this is an MTV production kind of thing. It just didn't have.
I totally agree. I think the exact same thing. I mean, like, I'm glad his story is being brought back up into a topic of conversation. I just thought, yeah, the production value was whatever. It was not really great. You know, I just think it could have been better considering his life was so poignant and amazing, and he did some really great work, and, you know, he was a pioneer in that whole, in a lot of instances. But, yeah, I actually read that even today, it reflects the stigma of HIV, is that when they did the casting call for the lead, like, people didn't want to do it.
Right.
Because, yeah, so maybe, you know, I mean, some of the acting was a little, you know, not up to par, so I don't know. It's interesting. I don't know the inner workings of any of that, but it was okay. It was a little, you know, a little disappointing. It did remind me what a douchebag Puck was. Remember him? Oh my God! I think he got kicked off that season.
Yeah, most political, Real World. Really, that it's the only one that had. Of course, I don't follow the Real World, but it was the first reality show, and it's historic on many fronts. That way, you know, it was the beginning of reality. Nobody would have thought to do such a thing. That was really, you know, new, and then to put a positive in during the climate of AIDS that you're referring to, you know, that was radical and cutting edge. And now it's everything's just desensitized, because there's no boundaries and nothing's a surprise and it's just all out there. And there's not a political agenda. Like, there's not a political agenda. Well, that too. I mean, there is with same-sex marriage, of course, but I don't think that's on MTV because you got Logo.
Right.
Well, we're winding down to the last 2 minutes, Sherry. So before we go, I just wanted to give my take on the movie. I thought the movie was good, but I felt I lost myself in the story because there was too many flashbacks. For me, I personally... I'm tired of watching movies of people dying of AIDS.
Yeah.
You know, I want them to make movies of people living with HIV, and I challenge MTV and Logo and places like that to do it, because we need hope. And watching people die on TV, it isn't fun anymore. Like, it was never fun, but it's just...
Yeah, I hear you.
We're not. That's not happening now.
Well, that's one of the reasons I was powered to write my story, because I said not only is it historic and it is a woman's story, but how about someone who not just survived, but stayed healthy, embraced, and grew?
Right.
You
well,
know?
Robert, I do want to interject and say it is happening now. Unfortunately, there are still people dying. It's like, it may not be so prevalent here domestically in the U.S., but like where people don't have access to meds, where people aren't getting tested, that people, you know, supposedly a fifth of the population, I think Clinton even said this in the intro to the Pedro movie, you know, a fifth to a quarter of the population that's HIV positive doesn't know because they don't get tested. So, you know, those are the people that are dying and getting sick because they're not getting the treatment that they need and seeing the doctor. So, you know, it is still a big issue. It's just,
yeah, I think I misspoke. What I meant was there's enough movies out there about it that we can watch.
Right.
You know, but the Pedro movie was really important. Once again, Sherry, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. And as soon as Straight Girl in a Queer World has a podcast interview, I'm going to be getting to you.
There you go.
And you have to come back on when your book is done, and we'll plug the hell out of it.
Yeah,
real quick before you go, Sherry, can you do your impression of, who was it, Jack?
Heidi Klum.
Thank
you. Heidi Klum.
I don't do Heidi Klum.
You did on your podcast. You said either you're in or you're out.
Oh, yeah.
I just want to thank everyone for tuning in. You can join us. We will be back here next Wednesday with Ongina from RuPaul's Drag Race. You can learn more about Jack McEnroth at jackmcenroth.com or livingpositivebydesign.com. And again, you can join the PodZion community at podzion.com. Sherry, do you have a website that people can find you at, or your podcast website?
Actually, they can find me if they go on Facebook, Straight Girl in a Queer World. I have a Facebook page, and there I can hook you up to the Hear Networks, which if you go to hearnetworks.com and go to the podcast, you will see my podcast, and you can download all 60 of them.
There you go. Sherry, thank you so much for joining us.
Okay,
thank you.
Thanks. It's been fun.
Have a great day.
Okay, stay positive out
there. Bye, guys. Stay positive. Right on.